This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. We're joined by former professional football defensive tackle who played for the Atlanta Falcons and the Detroit Lions before committing his life to organizing workers in the Deep South. Edgar Fields is Southeast Council President of the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, which represents 100,000 members throughout the United States. Edgar, I know you've been involved in the labor movement on your own, and as somebody who is an organizer for decades now, and I wonder if you can just put your face on how you got involved in organized labor, your experience with unions, and what took you to this point with the RWDSU.
During my Virginia, I was a young teen, a lot of at my age joined the laborers. Found out during the summer, being a big kid, I wanted to work. I needed to earn my money. So I went and got a job at a construction site, told them I was 18, and was working with this group of guys that was making more money than I was. And they told me they were members of a union. And I said, well, how do I become a part of a union? And they told me, and I went and joined the laborers union. Well, at that time, the trade, this was late 60s, the trade still had black and white local. So I went and joined the local that was in primarily black community there in Austin, Texas, and I became a laborer. I did that for the summers that I was in high school and then ended up going to school at Texas University on a football scholarship. Played my time there, made all kinds of honors, went on to play professional football for the Atlanta Falcons and Detroit Lions. While playing football, it's so ironic, I was very active in the community, did a lot of things in politics. Ended up meeting a guy by the name of James Orton. James worked for the Civil Rights Movement. He was part of Dr. King's movement and also SCLC. He became one of my best friends and also my mentor to teach me about the Civil Rights Movement and also the labor movement. At that time, labor saw the importance of working hand-in-hand with the Civil Rights Movement, and a lot of times labor recruited civil rights activists to work for labor. If you can organize a civil rights movement, if you can organize a civil rights march, you can organize a labor union because you're working directly in the community. So the civil rights movement had a lot of people that went on to work for organized labor. At that time, James worked for AFL-CIO as a union organizer. He also did a civil rights activity. We became friends because he asked me, as a quote-unquote celebrity football player in the Atlanta area, to speak at an organizing drive for lumberyard workers. The group was primarily black in Georgia, and he asked me to go speak, knowing that I was active with our union. So I did. And that was my first introduction into organizing people that did not have a voice into a union. From that point, James and I became friends to where I traveled with him. We traveled throughout the country. Even there, we worked with some of the locals there in New York. That was my first introduction to labor. Later on, I went to work for the Carpenters Union in 85. I was an organizer, and out of my first organizing drive, organized 600 workers at a lumber yard, and I was successful in WIN. And what I did, I followed the lead of James as far as being a civil rights leader on how to organize people. That brings me to where I am now. During that time, I still followed James's lead, getting involved with Martin Luther King celebration, getting involved fighting for the national holiday, and also fighting for the fact that everyone has a voice. When we were fighting for the national holiday in Atlanta, we would march from where the King Center sits now to the Capitol, fighting for the holiday, to fight for everyone. Ended up going to work for the Carpenters and continued my career with that. Ended up working for RWDSU. I've been with this organization for over 20 years. RWDSU has a heck of a civil rights history. They were right there with the civil rights movement. They were right there fighting for people in New York, right beside some of the other unions, that could be an Act 2, related garment workers, all of which came out of New York. And RWDSU was right there in the forefront for the civil rights movement. So it brings us to where we are today. We're still fighting for the rights of the poultry worker. Some of my earlier campaigns was with people in the South. Poultry is strong in the South, be it Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma. Poultry workers underpaid, overworked, underappreciated. They don't receive the money that they should. They don't receive the benefits. It's a repetitive job, long hours. When you look at chasing chickens on a line, up running anywhere between 30 and 40 birds a minute, and you're having to cut this meat up, you're doing that all day, so it's backbreaking, and they're not appreciated. So we had that fight, and we're fortunate enough to have members that are there and that support this union. We, in turn, support what they're doing and also fight for them. especially today with this virus.
Well, I want to take us to Annie Grant, who was a poultry worker and whose death highlights the spread of coronavirus in meat plants. Tell us about Annie Grant and the workers that the RWDSU are fighting for in thousands of poultry processing workers across the southern United States who are now subject to and are being gobbled up by the jaws of this voracious contagion.
Annie Grant has been a union member and is also an activist. She's from the local area where Tyson, which is located in Camilla, Georgia, is located. Annie Grant had, I think she had been there this last time, maybe 14 years. From what I was told, Annie had come in and complained of not feeling well and was encouraged to stay at work in fear of getting a point and or having hours taken away. So she stayed at work. Subsequently, she ended up being tested positive for the virus and passing. We've actually had three members to die from this facility, the one of which had been there 35 years, which was one of the union activists of Stewart that had been there since day one. So all of which worked hand in hand, Annie Grant, Lewis Willis, they all worked hard. And some of the sad parts that we find here is that when this virus started to be rampant in the poultry industry, companies trying to figure out how do we produce enough chicken or how do we continue our production and still have these workers come to work. Well, no one was sure as to how this virus passed or the symptoms other than the fact that they were saying if you had a fever, you had a cough, if you had a headache, you know, you need to stay at home. And Annie Grant was trying to do that because she wasn't sure as to what her feelings were other than the fact that she didn't feel well. She stayed at work and she died. We have to not only focus on the fact that we're dealing with poultry workers with this virus, but we're dealing with poultry workers that are underpaid and underappreciated. This virus brings light to the fact that a person that works to work in some people in the chicken plant provides a important part of our daily life. These folks are vital workers to the food chain. They feed the nation. We represent other companies, just not Tyson, but we represent Cook Foods, Purdue, Pilgrim Pies. We represent all of them. And even today, you have poultry workers that are going to work to process chicken to feed us all over the country, and we don't recognize it. The majority of your poultry facilities are in small town USA. It may be the best paying job in the area, maybe even have some of the best benefits, especially if they're union. Where our facility is in Camilla, there's three other companies around that are non-union. Tyson has the best benefits that's there, very competitive wage, and they have a bargaining agreement where the employees have an opportunity to combat and attest any write-up, whereas they don't have it the others. So that is the benefit that the union brings to that plant. And not only with the fight that we're having right now, started out with just Tyson, but it's actually in the poultry industry that we want all the poultry industry to appreciate their workers. You look at a plant down the street from Tyson, be it Sanderson Farms, which is non-union, they shut down because they had so many people that had tested positive with the virus. But those workers have no one to fight for them. When we took this fight on, it wasn't only for our members at Tyson. It was for all of the folks that work in the poultry industry. And we have to bring light to the fact that these workers get up every morning, even though they may be fearful, they may be scared as hell about going to work, talking to someone, bringing the virus home to their children, their elderly relatives, their mother, their father, and not know.
Well, let's use the Camilla plant as an example. What is it about the poultry processing plant that makes it so ripe as a breeding ground for the coronavirus? And what is the plant saying that they're doing to protect workers, and what should they be doing?
At our Tyson plant, as an example, there's 2,000 workers in there. Facility kill chicken. They debone chickens that has the first and second processing, and they sell to major restaurant companies. Processing facilities, you're working elbow to elbow. Either you're hanging the birds as they come in live, and you have guys standing there anywhere from 9 to 12 people, standing side by side, hanging live chickens as they come out, side by side, sweaty, dirty work. Anything they do, either they face to talk to each other, breathing on each other. That process continues throughout the facility. And then when you get to the part where the chickens has been eviscerated, the chickens has been scalded, the chickens have been tipped in the tank and treated for any type of bacteria, then they get to the area where they're deboned. You may have anywhere between 30 and 40 people standing on a single line, elbow to elbow, with chicken passing in front of them like a conveyor belt, and they're standing there elbow to elbow making a particular cut on a chicken. As they turn, they're breathing on each other. They're talking to each other because you're doing this all day. So some of the fights, one of the initial things, we wanted to spread these lines. Initially, we wanted to have a space in there to where we would have an opportunity for them to get away and do it so that would slow the line down. Tyson has finally come around, and they put in dividers between each person. They did on the live hang area, and they also done it in the demote area to where there's dividers there between employees. So they're not breathing on each other. So they've actually slowed the line down some. The things that we've asked them to do at this point. But that is the culture of the focus plan. It took a little while to even find out that, yeah, we need to do this. We wanted to do the temperature check.
We're speaking with Edgar Fields, president of the Southeast Council of the RWDSU.
Let me just ask you something about that. I mean, the last time Building Bridges visited a poultry plant was a while ago after, since you mentioned the culture, in Hamlet, North Carolina. Poultry workers were locked in. There was a fire, and they burnt to death. And that, my sense of whether it's Tyson Foods, whether it's Equity Foods, whether it's JBS, Pilgrim's Pride, or Coke Foods, the culture of the southern, and they're mostly in the southern area, the southern region, poultry processing plants have been enormously abusive to the generally hundreds to thousands of workers who work on that site. So I'm wondering now, in response to the coronavirus and the conditions you've just described, to address this culture, what did the RWDSU implore these poultry industry employers to do at this point for these essential workers? And what was the industry's response?
We've had different response from different companies, all of which we are going to send out a demand letter as far as things that we want to see changed with this virus. And this is, but it was in March, with listing the fact that we wanted temperature checks, we wanted masks, we wanted separation, we wanted the break areas. Because in a large poultry plant, you may have hundreds of people sitting in a break time, in a break room side by side at lunchtime. We wanted areas where the people are spread out so they could experience a social distance, and even during that time. We wanted the doors removed so they wouldn't have to touch handles if there was a turnstile. We wanted the turnstile removed. If they had to use a finger to clock in, we wanted that eliminated anyway. And we wanted sanitizer. We wanted someone designated on a consistent basis to clean the break room, to clean the common areas, be it the toilet, and anywhere that an employee may come in contact with something someone else touched. In a poultry processing plant, when you walk in the processing area, you're supposed to sanitize. You come in, you automatically wash your hands. And that's fine, but if you're not wearing a mask and really not known at that time, and we still question how do you actually transmit this virus, so at that time we fought for masks. And in some cases, even face shields to protect the workers, because we're finding now, you know, that may be a case also. Those were all of the things that we demanded. Not only types, we sent out letters to, if not all, the majority of the processing facilities that we dealt with, including some that didn't deal with poultry. You know, because then, too, our union represents other food processing companies or other distribution companies that are working today other than poultry. So we must protect all of our workers. But this is what we did with Tyson. We met with them. We went over our demands, and they did. First change the name was, I think they did the thermometer. And since then, not only have they been doing thermometers, they also do an infrared where you walk through, and it automatically detects your temperature, which is because they had to buy the machines for it. They're doing the mask. They're doing the gloves. But someone else interviewed me, and I told them, I said, as long as the company take care of our members, once they walk in the door, and once they walk out, that is all that we can ask them to do. Once they leave, they're no longer their responsibility. But we have to keep our members working, and we have to keep them working in a safe manner.
What needs to be done in other parts of the industry, other employers? Tyson's, what more do they need to do? What about other employers? Are they doing anything to help the conditions in the plants that lead to coronavirus?
In Camilla, Georgia, there were 2,000 members. Three have died now, and many, many others are sick or in quarantine. So just want to talk about what is happening there still, whether there's been a recognition of and safe conditions
being put into effect and what's happening to those workers that are in quarantine before we just take up Ken's question of looking at, I know there are areas that you represent people in Shelby, Tennessee, and Carthage, Mississippi. So where are we at now with the plant in Georgia?
The plant in Georgia, we have weekly conference calls, or if needed, more, with Tyson Health Division. Their HR director is there. If I ask them question, they answer the question, whereas before, it wasn't more of a direct answer. We're working together on trying to resolve the issue. They're doing today what should have been done in March, but they are doing it. They are providing masks to the employees. They are providing gloves to the employees that want them. They are doing the separation. They are allowing employees to spread out during break. On the attendance policy, I don't want someone to come to work because they're fearful of losing their job and they're not well. Every employee needs to feel comfortable to make the decision, I don't know about this, I need to stay my butt here. That's what they need to do. But let's look at the big picture of this virus. And this happened the other day with another employer that I was having this discussion with, and it erupted. We want people to feel comfortable staying at home without being penalized. If they fall within the guidelines, be it self-quarantine, we want that person to feel comfortable to stay at home. And if we're going to pay them, and they fall within that two-week period, pay them. You still have companies out here that are playing games. And I had one tell me the other day that the person didn't feel well. No, they wanted to go home, and we let them, but we told them they couldn't come back until they were clear. And I said, so are you going to pay them for the period that they're out? Because obviously you're thinking that this may have something to do with the virus. They said no, because their test came back that it was negative, so we're not going to pay them. So you're sending the person, not letting the person come to work with fear that it may be pertaining to the virus, but once they test, you're saying, now you're not going to pay them for the time out. So that's another company that I'm fighting with, and it's Netflix, that is doing that. This right now is people trying to get other employees to come to work. HR is running rampant. Facility managers have said that it's so high as far as folks not coming to work. Well, you need to make do. If folks don't come to work in today's society, it's because they're scared. And I would rather them be scared and stay at home rather than be fearful of losing their job and bring the virus to work where they can transmit it to other folks and get more of their employees sick. So this is a major issue that we're dealing with.
There was even actually some talk about, or I don't know if this was instituted, about offering people a $500 bonus regardless to come to work tied to their attendance, and it's not even going to be paid out, if it's paid out at all, until July.
July. That's the time. But let me point out, Tyson's not the only one offering that $500 bonus. Quick Foods is doing the same thing. Tyson's
so profits well. Before people, for sure. I mean, what an outrage. $500 tied to attendance, regardless.
But is that anything new? The greed is still there. But we demanded hourly increases, what our demand letter was. $3 to $5 is what it was. Tyson came back with a $500 bonus to where the cycling was, as long as there were no unexcused absences. And what they were saying is that unexcused was anyone that did not call in. So they said a person received a bonus.
And this is from a company, America's largest meat producer, which makes more than $40 billion in annual revenue.
And it feels like Tyson is the leader in the industry. They feel as though that this bonus suffices. The employees themselves don't feel, they felt as though it was a slap in the face. And here's what I've been told by the members there, that they feel as though it should have been an hourly increase, and it should be weekly instead of having to wait till July to receive it. So that's something that we don't care for, and it's something that we continually fight. Cook Foods has a similar bonus program, and that's exactly what they're doing also.
And what about sick leave when the worker calls in sick because of the virus? You had mentioned two weeks. Is that all?
Well, it's 2 weeks there. I don't have the exact Tyson policy in front of me, so I don't want to quote something that's not true. We did work on an expanded sick leave policy for Tyson. They also have a short-term disability program that is there also that employees qualify for.
Is there a universal protocol that RWDSU is trying to effectuate in all of these meat processing plants, and I should say, of course, the other food plants that are also under the ambit of the RWDSU? You mentioned Nestle's, et cetera. So what is to be done now? How are you pressing the demands of the workers in the time of pandemic, which are sorely neglected to the point of people dying in these industries?
To speak on behalf of RWDSU, what we're fighting for is safety rights. When we start looking at the poultry industry, be it a distribution, be it anybody dealing with food, we have to first look at the safety of the worker. We have to provide a safe work environment, especially with this virus, to where that employee walk in the door and feel comfortable that morning when they leave their house, knowing that my employer has done everything they possibly can do to protect me once I go into the facility. The problem that we're having is that all employees aren't doing that, and some are working with us. We're insistent that we come up, and trust me, the question you just asked me is one that I question, because we're trying to work on something right now to where we have a demand on all the industry as far as this is what we want all industry to do. But we have to provide a safe working environment as far as social distance, as far as that temperature, where temperatures aren't everything. Do we have an opportunity for the person to be tested if they choose, or do we make it mandatory to work there? Those are the questions. Are we walking all over HIPAA rights, possibly doing that perhaps, and disability rights? But we have to have something in place, and we're working on just that. This virus is so new to where none of us can sit there and say, well, yeah, this is how we did this before. None of us have that to go on. This is all new, so this thing is moving daily, and even our responses to it is moving daily as to what we have to do. That may not answer your question, but I don't have a definite answer for you as far as what we're asking the companies to do, other than providing a safe work environment and work hand in hand with our health and safety department to put all those in effect.
Edgar Fields, let me ask you this. Are there enough people at 7 o'clock in the evening who are going out and banging pots and pans or screaming or applauding for the essential workers who are keeping this society functioning?
No.
Are they applauding for, and should they be, if they're not, for the tens of thousands of food workers, from the poultry and meat plants to the food processing plants, that are keeping people similarly to healthcare workers alive?
No, by no, because as I stated earlier, these are invisible workers. They're in small-town USA. When you look at the work that a pork processor worker do, beef, chicken, these folks are going to work every day, and they have no appreciation because people do not see them. When people do get in those grocery stores, they're not looking at the fact that someone had to process that meat that's there today while they're sitting at home, and they can conveniently go to the store and buy their leg quarters, their breast meat, whatever else they're going to buy. Someone had to process it. We need to show our appreciation for these folks that go to work every day, and we need to do it as far as that cashier that's actually standing across from us, checking us out, and thank God we finally put our shields there. Because there's certain protocol that even as a person that walks in the store to buy, we should take those protocols to protect that cashier person. We should wear gloves. We should wear masks, because we don't want the opportunity of passing our germs on to them. We should watch what we touch in the store. There are certain things that we need to do as far as customers in these stores to protect the workers so they can continue to open that grocery store, so they can continue to stock the shelf, so workers can continue to provide meat on our meat shelf. These are things that we need to show our appreciation for those workers. I would love to have a day to where we show our appreciation for the folks that work in these processing plants. I think they would greatly appreciate it. It is amazing. The companies do not appreciate the fact that we're bringing this issue to the forefront. They don't appreciate the fact that we send out a media release about the problems that the poultry workers are having. But the members love it. The members see it as people speaking up. The members see it as someone finally hearing their side of the story. We started the story off with Annie Grant. I've been in contact with Annie Grant's children. Loving family. Kids went on to do bigger and better things other than a mother that worked in a processing plant. And let me not belittle the fact that she worked at a processing plant. She worked at a processing plant because that's what was there. And she achieved what she needed to achieve as far as making sure her children had an education. Every one of them is out there doing things, be it her son that's a teacher, be it one of her daughters that's an emergency nurse, that is one of those essential workers, frontline workers also. She did everything she could to make her life better for her children while working at a poultry plant. And we owe people like Annie Grant and Lois Willie, we owe those people more than what society has given them, because even though they may work at a chicken plant, they provided food for the nation.
Edgar Fields, thank you for the work that you do with the RWDSU and for making sure that we don't have to memorialize more Annie Grants, who are heroic in the services they provide for the nation. Thanks very much for joining us and being a labor organizer, standing up for the working men and women who are the ones who create the wealth, who are the ones who make this country run.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to get on here and also to point out and also to try to share some of the views of our members that actually work in these facilities day to day.
Thank you, Edgar.
Well, thank you for your passion, and thanks for spending the time with us, sir.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Edgar Fields, president of the Southeast Council of the RWDSU.
Building Bridges urge all of you to stay strong, stay safe.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.